Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction? Devin Tilley here, and this is one I am so jazzed about. After going back and doing some thinking, meeting with Scotty and talking through after some great work we're doing with Audrey Grubesic of Offsite Dirt. And she had a great platform with a company called Be Public Prefab. And a couple talking tracks I'm just going to put out there, and I'm going to put an asterisk out there, is if you've been listening to some of the other Deep Dive Series podcasts where I've had retreats and all this stuff coming together, I'm coming in, it's all converging and we just keep hitting record. And so my voice is going to hang with me as far as it can. And if it falls off, I brought in some superstars to fill me in here coming up next. But a few talk tracks is that the statement I want to just put out there right off the bat is that this housing shortage and crisis, but more importantly, this climate crisis, this can't wait till I'm bigger. And that soundtrack and that resonated to me as my 6.5-year-old when Edie said this. And I was like, wow, I need to talk to her about that, because what they're doing of doing a great job about talking about who they are, but also what they're not, about making standard components come to life and building a company, a collaborative, and a movement. And to do that, we got to bring back in Matt McMullen to help us talk about prefab panels, who's doing a lot of work. So Matt, you may have to help me a lot on this one as my voice is keep cranking, but welcome back to Studio AOC.
Hey man, thanks for inviting me to ride with you again on your quest for AOC leaders of the tribe. So I look forward to it.
Awesome. So we're going to be having Edie Dillman, who is the CEO and co-founder, as well as Jonah Stanford, the CTO and co-founder of this amazing company. And my perspective is that thinking about conservation is important. But more importantly, like I said about my 6-year-old, is like Edie has this points of view that really talk through the housing crisis, but also the climate crisis. And how can we improve the system built process? If you go back to give credit to Audrey Grubesic, where we met them, her and I did 20 podcasts around modular building. And we talk about what is this system built process and how we can build better buildings, and talk about how we can have passive house and high performance for everyone. And so like the Passive House Accelerator and all these platforms that I've just been listening in and being a student of the game, this is one I'm so excited about, because these people are not just talking about it. They're full on doing it. Matt, what's your perspective for today?
You know, I really want to talk to them about sort of the thing that makes their company unique from other panelization companies. And also want to talk about the name, right? It's not like a common name. At first I thought it was a rap name, Be Public, but we will hear that story. I understand they're a mission-driven company, and so I'm really excited to hear all about it.
Awesome. Without further ado, let's get in and get to know Edie and Jonah and their story of Be Public Prefab. Lock and load, tribe. What's your favorite beverage?
Well, I got to say, always, every day, Ahori's Coffee, locally roasted in Santa Fe, New Mexico. But for an evening beverage, I'm very fond of Mai Tais this summer.
Mm, tasty. And tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
You know, I think Greece is really close to my heart right now, and was really special adventure for me, and dying to go back to the islands and get some really good Greek food, I think is maybe what's at the core of that.
Awesome. Well, give us one story from your trip there.
You know, we went when you mentioned in your intro that I've got kids. We went when my daughter was 5 months old, and I know a lot of people are afraid of traveling with littles. When they're little and they're still sort of attached to you, you get to move really quickly. So walking through Athens in traffic with an infant and really getting to move quickly and get on ferries and move around, it was a great time to travel. And I think taught us that traveling with kids, it's about training them to be travelers and to be out and about, not waiting for them to get big and be well behaved. So we had a great time with her. She got very used to strangers and getting picked up by waitresses and taken into the kitchen, and just got really good at being with people and strangers. It was great.
Super cool. And what's your favorite hobby or passion outside of the construction silos we're going to passionately talk about today that we call the art of construction?
You know, I don't know if I'd call it a passion or a hobby, but I really love to dance. And I am very fond of dancing in the kitchen, dancing while driving. We finally, after COVID broke, had a COVID-safe dance party. And I think it might have been the thing I missed most, was dancing with friends and really getting down.
All right, Jonah, you got to hear Edie on the speed round first, so you get to know you next year. What's your favorite beverage?
All right, I think favorite beverage, I'd have to say anything with caffeine related, definitely.
All right, and your favorite place you've traveled?
You know, I feel like I'm lucky enough to live in my favorite place, which is, you know, in the Rocky Mountains. We're down in Santa Fe, actually, but just on the southern end of it, but anywhere in the Rockies, it's got to be my favorite.
Yeah, my retreat place that we're just launching, and we have a bunch of art of construction events planned for down there, is in Westcliff, Colorado. And it's amazing where you guys are at and other places, of the secret places of the mountain ranges out there outside of the big name places. So what is your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos we're going to talk about breaking down today that we call the AOC?
I think if you asked my kids, they'd say hiking, because I'm constantly asking them if they want to go for a hike. Yeah.
Well, there we go. We got to know a little bit about Edie and Jonah. So let's get this party started. Edie, what is your story that led you becoming the CEO and co-founder of Be Public Prefab?
Well, it's a great question, and it was not a straight path to this company. It all makes sense to me now, but I was a designer for many years. I really came from the magazine world. I was in entertainment as an art director. And I made a jump from that, wanting more meaning in my work, and jumped to nonprofit work. And I was very fortunate to enter into a very disruptive sector around education to workforce, and really looking at the economy and what are the skills in a skills-based economy. What do we really need to make this economy work? What are we educating in high school and in trades and in higher ed? And is it matching what the economy is seeking? What are those future jobs? And in that work, discovering that we really emptied the trades, that we convinced people for a better, you know, American dream, a different life, a better life, that they needed to go to a 4-year higher ed and not follow their family into the trades. And effectively what we did to that was create a 30-year skills gap that we're all seeing and feeling today. And this was at a time that, and we're gonna talk to Jonah in a second, was developing a system to standardize passive house or offsite construction for high performance. And, you know, the seed for that need was, you know, there are very few people in the US trained for passive house or high performance assemblies. And this is exactly what I was finding in the research around the trades, that we simply have sort of sent people away and have failed to attract new talent and different people into the trades, and realizing, well, this is the disruption. So I jumped from creating apps and doing online education and marketing and design around the skills-based economy into, let's just create those green jobs that are really attractive and pull people in and find new ways forward.
What a story. And it's such an honor that we need so many more people like you, Edie, that are thinking that way and come from the background to where, not burying our head in the sand. So we're grateful to have you here. And also, Jonah, so what is your story that led you becoming the CTO and co-founder of Be Public Prefab?
Most of my professional upbringing was in the arts and in the construction fields. So working as project management on the construction side, as well as real estate development for affordable housing nonprofits. And then ultimately going on and getting into architecture, taking my exams, and then right around that similar time frame, becoming aware of passive house construction, you know, during this sort of pursuit of when Lead for Homes pilot project was being released, looking at affordable housing development and trying to solve that nut of, cost of construction for sustainability or environmental impact reduction. And that's when we came across passive house in 2008 and, became passive house consultant. Actually went through one of the first generations of passive house consultants in North America, and really it's been sort of a fish trap for us in terms of performance, that it's the concept it's moved beyond the concept, but the knowledge that it's most efficient to invest in energy conservation in the long run than it is in efficient generation per se. And also really working on affordable housing and what Edie was talking about of just sort of that skills gap and a lack of on the job training. We were seeing, a big race to the bottom with our builders, that the only thing that they were being asked was like how low could they go in their cost. So people were measuring was that cost, and really not, seeing that that wasn't leading to a sustainable society in terms of that workforce and the compensation. Really seeing that passive house was a really great approach to reducing overall energy consumption and addressing, housing and not wanting to throw away, we need a solution that doesn't throw away the environmental component to that. And so really working on standardizing, our firm was working on standardizing passive house assemblies that would work in multiple climate ranges and so forth. And but looking at a way to scale that, and that's really where Edie's interest, expressed her interest in it. And that was really the birth of Be Public.
Hey, one thing I just want to say, Edie, is, Jonah threw a lot of stuff out there that hopefully we'll be able to double back around and talk about passive house. We're working with Enrico Bonalari. And so I think there's a lot to talk about there. Affordability is a passion for Art of Construction. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that. But I want to jump back to the intro where I made the joke about Be Public as if it was sort of a rap group. Can you talk a little bit about the name Be Public and how you guys came up with that?
Yeah, the B really represents the word benefit. It also, for us, speaks to more than that, building better. There were a lot of B-boy words in there. Thank you for the hip-hop reference. But we're incorporated as a benefit corp. So it's a form of corporation that's sort of spreading. But it means that we're a triple bottom line. So written into our bylaws is both housing creation, protecting the environment, and of course, profitability. So this is a part of a movement worldwide that is both B Corp, but it's also called social ventures. It's also called impact ventures or conscious capitalism. Really talking about, I think we've seen the danger of profit at all costs or with disregard to the environment or society. And this movement is about organizations, companies really trying to do better on all sides, for employees, for the environment, for customers, and just looking differently, more deeply on our decision-making. So that's what the B is about. But I appreciate you thinking it's about hip hop. I will not rap for you now, Matt.
You did mention dancing. You did mention dancing earlier, so I thought maybe we'd get some rap out of you too. But B company, B Corps, I remember when they launched in the 2000s. And so it warms my heart to know that you guys have embraced that, because, you know, the three P's are absolutely crucial. You know, when I looked at your guys' website, you're a very mission-driven company. Can you talk in more detail about your mission and what you guys want to accomplish?
Yeah, and you know, we want to change a lot. We really do think of this technology and low energy buildings as being important for all. And there are a lot of people who are very excited about this movement, but a lot of it is designed for custom homes for single families or just for large commercial projects. And we really believe that everyone deserves to be in a home that is healthy, that is resilient, that's built to last for generations. And that's not necessarily the expectation of the marketplace. So I come from design and marketing. I think of these as ideas as bigger than us. So we do talk about movement building. And around mission. And we are collaborative in nature. We want to work with other nonprofits, with other, you know, venture companies that are trying to do good. And this is just our system is a function of getting to a better building, a more resilient, low cost, we hope, project. If we can eliminate our dependence on energy, our dependence on harmful carbon binging materials, we're incorporating a lot of complexity into our thinking as a company. And we think of that as mission and vision based. We're different. I think we'll talk about that a little bit in this podcast. All three of the founders went to art school. We think like artists. We think creatively. We think collaboratively. We don't necessarily think like your traditional MBAs. And we think that's a huge advantage when you're looking to open people's minds, create different opportunities. And that sounds a little crunchy, perhaps. But we're really wanting to do that for builders. We talk a lot about any builder can now become a high-performance builder. Any local builder can raise the capacity of how many buildings they build if they utilize panelized or offsite. It really adds to their toolkit.
No, I think that's inspiring. And yeah, as artists, you guys can create, design, and decorate the box and then think outside of it. So you guys are covering all the bases. Hey, Jonah, let me jump with you a little bit from the mission and vision and more down to the specific. Can you talk to us a little bit about your prefab process, like how it works, the projects that you guys work on, who your clients are, a little more in-depth detail about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. So our process, I think to step back on that a little bit, that the basis for our design assumptions is really that the sustainability, and I mean, we're measuring that on the durability of the materials that are being used. So 100-year-plus life cycles, not life cycles, but serviceable life, and sustainability in terms of carbon sequestering, right? Really evaluating those materials. Sustainable from a workforce and manufacturing process, also really so focused on the opportunities around decentralized manufacturing that's able to integrate more into different communities. So there's a lot of just sort of basis for our designs that I think is important to establish when we talk about what kind of projects we do or what's our prefab project to do, right? So that's what I just talked about is really the basis for our design approach. And so projects that are coming to us are looking to overcome several obstacles that I think we're all really familiar with. One is an unpredictability in the construction bidding process, extremely high risk. like one point I think we talked about before is the measurement of only economics, right? So if you have a client that's saying like, well, you know, I'm not just going to evaluate the cost of construction. I actually want it to be performing well, or I want it to be sustainable. So that the issue of trying to get builders to take on additional risk or experimentation when they've got other, you know, clients in the wings that are asking them or ready for them to do the status quo. And then another one is a lot of people are needing to, you know, cut their teeth in the passive house building process and so forth. And it's really outside of what typical code is addressing, and code is really, you know, it's a very prescriptive document, and so you're very rarely sort of analyzing the specific appropriateness for a certain aspect of code application, and that's where I think passive house is pretty interesting, is like focusing on, like, you know, eliminating thermal bridging in a project is, you know, increasing your performance by 30%, reducing your air or increasing your air tightness to passive house criteria, which is around 0.6 air changes per hour, is another 30% in increasing your overall performance. So all of these things, these are great opportunities that you can actually implement from a design process that isn't R value related, but purely from just the design detailings, what your design details, you just, you know, dramatically increase the performance of your building. And so there's a lot of opportunities there that, you know, smaller residential projects, you know, projects that have limited scale aren't justifying the amount of architectural engineering services to address what would be considered these really sort of high-end building science analysis or WOFI for identifying thermal bridging and condensation and so forth. And so what BPublic is trying to do is address, like, provide standardized components that address air tightness, captive air spaces, you know, thermally bridge-free, all those items that are predictable. So when a project comes to us, we're putting together the different components that you're pulling from our standard component sizes and so forth. We're recreating, say, a client's floor plan. Sometimes that's an architect. Sometimes that's a private individual wanting to build a cabin. And so they're maybe pulling from what we would consider a common floor plan for us. But common floor plans are basically just different mixes from our standard building components of walls, floors, tops, and so forth. And so right at that initial pre-design phase or schematic design phase, just from a floor plan, BPublic is able to provide that client with a bid or estimate for construction, shipping, or prefabrication, shipping, and installation for a fully passive house assembly. Do that, you know, in a matter of a couple days and so forth, which is able to lend a lot of predictability for high performance buildings, and providing that confidence to the design official or the client that the details around, captive air spaces, air tightness and so forth is all really going to be addressed. Edie, do you have anything else you wanted to add to that?
So our process is dependent on who's calling or who's collaborating with us. We work directly with individual homeowners or landowners who are looking for a design, and we have standardized home plans that can be customized for a region or a roof line, but the performance is baked into the design, and they can license those directly with us and redesign. But primarily what we do is train architects and designers and builders to design with our panels. So it really is a kit of parts, components that you can build a building envelope with. And we have online tools that you can download and play with. But it's really to allow for quick adoption to both panelized offsite construction and high performance for building and design professionals. So depending on who they are and where they are, we can address climate zones 2 through 8. But we're really out there working with professionals, helping them understand how to shift and take advantage of offsite and where we might be able to work with them, and they could specify our panels.
Awesome. So if I understood this right, to kind of circle back a few things of Jonah, you were talking about kind of that low hanging fruit or some ways where you can really help with building science and doing things a few differently. And Edie, I heard you talk about climate zones, but I'm going to just put the question out there because I don't quite understand it. I've been going to a lot of these great different seminars and conversations, but Jonah, can you just give us a quick overview on climate zones in general and kind of how that works for those who are not familiar with them?
Yeah, thank you. And climate zones and building science like can be a really complex issue, but in general, you know, climate zones are breaking up, say, North America into, I believe, 8 different zones, and it's moving in one direction, and it's moving from hottest up to coldest. And then in another reference, it's identifying whether those are humid or dry environments. The temperature is, you know, simplifying it, but the temperature is, you know, affects whether you have a heating dominated client, a climate, or a cooling dominated climate. And then the hot humid and cold humid, the humidity sensors, those start impacting what sort of wall assemblies in our building science that we're going to need to have to address. And that is in response to condensing surfaces, basically. So anytime when water forms, anytime warm air hits a cold surface, period. And Joseph Stiebrick told me that that's the only thing I need to know about building science, and I totally agree with him. It really is that and so it's one of the reasons that Be Public wall assemblies and all of our assemblies are very vapor open, because it's really one of the most robust, solid methods of addressing or being able to build high performance construction across many, many climate conditions. And so it's a good question though.
All right. So that makes me think about this morning, a shout out to Gary Fleischer, the mod coach, where he put an article out this morning titled, "Are Insurance Companies Keeping Up with Construction's Newest Innovations?" And we had him on AOC show 217, and I've just been bringing these different people in, and we referenced Audrey with her awesome platform of offsite dirt earlier, and taking these different points of view of saying, how can we collectively come together to solve this bigger problem? And so I want to talk through, we met you through EMU Systems, and Jonah, I really like the, you know, I just simplify that to another is like, if it's really hot where you live, you better be a really good expert on cooling it. If it's really cold and you live in the Arctic, where I've been watching this show Alone, where these people get thrown into the Arctic, they better really know how to manage being in the cold. And so we live in Colorado. So our local partner, EMU Systems, with Mariana and Rico, have just been outstanding of, you know, working together to understand that the Colorado has all these seasons, right? And so to set that up, you have to understand who you're working with. And Edie, if I'm understanding that right, you're trying to make this systemized platform that this kit of parts can work in all the environments. And then you get the right specialist to work in that area. So Jonah, if I'm understanding that right, what is your take on the adoption of these passive house standards in America versus other places in the world? And how are we going to get there with tools like your kit of parts? Am I understanding that right? And kind of circle that back.
Yeah, no, I think that regarding the adoption of the passive house standards in the United States, you know, in comparison to how it's been doing in Europe, you know, it really is wildly successful and proven. I would say it has a very long track record in Europe. It's got 15 plus years in the United States as well. But I think it's important to remember that, you know, we live in a very capitalist society compared to most of Europe. And a lot of those policies in the adaption of passive house within big portions of Europe were really driven by government mandates, just basically, you know, very similar to our stating that it needs to be, you know, Energy Star or anything like that. It's those programs that are being established in that is pushing the industry to achieve them. And so, but that really the lessons that we've seen from passive house is really just the level of benefit that can come directly out of just increasing your insulation and your air tightness, period. And we really, I don't think commonly or widely understood in the United States, how far that can really increase the building's comfort and energy use reduction. You know, we say, oh, we'll change the windows, or, you know, there's minor sort of tweaks that move that dial, but really the significant impacts and benefits come from a total commitment to increasing the complete thermal envelope as a system and addressing all of the assemblies together, opposed to sort of individual air tightness measuring or caulking around, you know, weather sealing methods.
Awesome. And this is a part that I am really excited to talk about here. If you go back to show 218, the Blue Collar Warrior series, where I have John Stambaugh as our guest co-host, and it's a whole series talking about how we elevate the trades. And I'm really excited to talk with you, Edie, about this part, to say one of our passions is really how do we connect the field to the office and how do we all work together in the Art of Construction tribe. And when you talked about how we love those pink things around our part of kits, but that's not what we're not. But you're talking about how you can work within the Art of Construction and how you guys are true artists in your marketing background. We're honored to have you as the Art of Construction tribe leaders. But with your background in improving the education to workforce system, how do you think we can bring a new generation of skilled labor into the offsite construction movement that I'm really seeing it now is one of the greatest times to be in construction if you understand how this whole movement is going. What's your take to that, Edie?
Well, I think this pulls at my heartstrings, because I think one of the first questions anyone asks us on any call is around square foot costs. And currently people are really concerned about the cost of wood and lumber, and they're all talking about the cost of wood and lumber. But when people call and ask about the cost, square foot costs, they're not asking how well are the people building that building being paid and taken care of. And I think that's fundamental, is how we value. And Jonah mentioned earlier around sort of the race to the bottom around building costs. And, you know, we talk about that building just to code is not the goal, that we want to definitely beat code and build better than code. But it's also about, you know, how do we value and how do we talk about the trades? And I think by taking things offsite and putting them in a workshop, and I say workshop on purpose, not a factory, we're talking about craftsmanship and really valuing what is the hand and the mind involved in construction, and bringing it inside out of the rain and on a shift that anybody can come and punch in and have a stable job. It's really important to the trades that we can take the volatility and the unpredictability out of the workday to attract younger, more diverse people into the workforce. It has to be understood that there's a safe place to go, that they're going to have a job, and if it rains or snows, they're still going to get a paycheck. So I think that's fundamental around how we look at attracting people to the trades, and even design and, you know, renewable energy, all of it. We need to make it more exciting, interested, and valued in society. You know, these are not YouTubers. These are people who are creating housing. And for us, there's nothing higher or better to do with your career.
That's good, Edie. And you know, you think about it, right? Shelter is one of the primary human needs. And so once again, touches my heart to hear you talk about your passion for making sure that the people who are creating that shelter are being taken care of. Jonah, let me turn to you now.
Matt, if I could, I'd really like to add to that, that I think it starts with communicating to the trades that their work actually has a significant impact in the quality and performance of the buildings. It really does. And that plumbers work and the penetrations and those air barriers and the thermal envelope, those really are impactful. And that and really going and just empowering those trades. So thank you.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to also just add on to that a little bit too. You were talking earlier about, and I'll title it minimum competence. And I'm speaking to you as an architect, right? They tell you, hey, when you're taking the licensing exams, really you're just trying to become minimally competent at becoming an architect. And then the actual codes are about building a minimally competent structure. And then what we just talked about with the trades is having a minimal competence of caring about the labor that is actually accomplishing those functions. And it seems to me like you guys are raising the bar in all three of those areas, above minimum competence to a movement towards excellence. So having said that, can you talk a little bit about your overall thoughts on the role of design when you're doing offsite constructed homes, and if you see any difference in the design process that we all learned in school, how that changes from offsite to actual onsite stick build, if you notice anything different in your approach?
Yeah, I mean, I do, and it's interesting. Certainly in working with standard components and details or assemblies, that there's you're providing a pretty significant parameter to the design process. And so it does dramatically accelerate the design process because there's a whole slew of considerations or sort of thoughts that aren't even on the table. So you're not even discussing them. On the other hand, though, like when you compare an approach to prefabrication like BPublix to modular construction where you have whole, sections of the building completed that you're looking or model homes that you're looking at either flipping that floor plan or you're looking at rotating that floor plan, that still you have a lot of what you're limited in is your orientation and the way the flow of the building moves through the house, what's your front door and your back door. Still, the plan is establishing those things. Where working with the BPublic components, that's your layout is one of the things that doesn't have any restrictions on it, right? And so you have complete freedom in terms of orientation or designing in a site, in site-specific responses, both for solar, perhaps the adjacency to a building or a street, where your views are. And so I think it's a pretty big difference between utilizing the standard components of BPublic compared to modular home design, which is really, it's fascinating.
Yeah, it's a good distinction between the two. And I know we've experienced some of the same things that you've said when we've been looking at offsite built. There, you know, the worst thing that you can give a designer is a blank sheet, right? We design better when we have constraints. And so
for both the client and the designer, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. Well, Edie, let me turn to you. What kind of conversations has BPublic had with developers around your product and your system? And if you can share any stories of developers who have worked with you that are starting to see the benefits of your high performance building.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, some of our most exciting conversations this year so far have been with developers and developers of both single family homes, neighborhoods, but multifamily. We've got some great clients in estimating doing sort of traditional city infill of 3 flats and 6 flats, as well as larger multifamily developments. And it's they're just really interesting clients for us because, of course, they get the benefits, right? They've built multiple projects. They've had those just disasters, and they've also had those great successes. And all developers, all they want to do is figure out that perfect project and duplicate it, right? They want that perfect program and find another lot and do exactly that again and again. And with us, it's exciting because, of course, they love the speed up out of the ground and weathered in. You know, the carrying costs for multifamily development, it's significant to get up 20% faster, right? To have it fully insulated in a matter of weeks rather than months. The light bulb goes off. They love it. What's really exciting is some of those developers who maybe haven't been considering low energy or some of this more progressive green in their developments, but being excited about what we're doing and what we offer for that speed to build and capacity for their projects. They're really excited. What are those incentives nearby? Oh, does that mean our solar system could be smaller? Oh, does that mean we could charge more? Oh, does that mean we could build more? So those conversations are really exciting. And I have to say, it's across the country. A lot in California, a lot on the East Coast. But that comfort level, and for those developers who maybe are going for a slightly more quote unquote luxury product, the sound quality. I mean, for those of us who've lived in multifamily, really, it's great to be able to see your neighbors. But it's an imposition to hear them. And so talking to developers who are developing projects on train lines or near freeways, where they're going to have stacked and have neighbors, but they still want that premium price, the sound quality of a well-insulated building with 3-pane windows, it's an amenity that is palatable. It's really different, and it's not just that granite countertop. It really is the quality of the living space that's different, and that's what they get excited about because it's the next. It's the new, right? They love having what's going to be even better in their marketplace, and so those are phenomenal conversations, very exciting relationships developing.
Yeah, and that's where we have to bring this to light, right? And so, Jonah, I'm curious what your take is to this of, you know, at what point do you think homeowners will truly start to collectively demand this type of building and what Edie was just talking about, or will they ever, as kind of that loaded part of the question?
I think it's inevitable. I think that, I mean, we're already seeing a demand for it. I think there's but there's significant portion of our, or percentage of our housing is done in spec housing development and in multiple family construction, where the end user, whether that's a tenant or an owner, doesn't have the opportunity to actually make requests on how their building performance is and so forth. And so what we are seeing, though, is that the people that are have the luxury of making those decisions are making those decisions to actually increase the performance and address energy sustainability and sort of like, but I think, and that's what I think it is really the crux of the conversation in a lot of ways, because this is our opportunity to address critical sustainability and energy poverty that's going to be an issue in 30 or 40 years. Like, if we don't, the buildings that we build now need to be appropriate for housing in 50 years or 40 years. We need to be actually providing sustainable housing. So sustainable housing isn't just what the environmental impact of those materials are, but also, is that building methodology appropriate to housing in 50 years? When we do definitely see a time where our energy costs are going to be increasing. As our infrastructure ages and so forth, we're going to start identifying the true cost for our utilities, and those costs are going to go up. And what Be Public is really trying to focus on is providing a solution to that now so that we can get it in the ground. So the other portion of it that I think is a hurdle is, again, what you measure. So the from a real estate development perspective, if your appraisal comps are 30% adjacency and 30% identical square footage, and then the rest is amenities like countertops and finishes, but doesn't look at or value any sustainability or performance, then that value from a market perspective or resale perspective isn't going to notch up. And so I think that's potentially one of our biggest hurdles that we've got now. And until we start measuring the performance of a building, just like you measure your, or you look at your gallons per mile on your car, you would never buy a new car unless you knew that what the miles per gallon is of it. But at the same time, where people are purchasing houses, just like you talked about, that they don't know what that wall assembly is. They don't know how it's going to be performing and so forth. And so we need to start being really clear about, establishing a true performance measure for a residential building so that homeowners actually can measure that.
So as we wind down this fireside chat, we're going to ask Jonah and then Edie. We asked this question on all the podcasts, and this is that whole, how do we eat this crazy construction elephant? And we say one podcast at a time, right? And so what is your crystal ball, Jonah, for the future with technology in construction?
I have to say, I think humans are the next, the future of technology.
I love that.
I remember like my first year at art school, and this program post came out that was called Adobe, and you could posterize like any graphic image. And we were also amazed by the technology that we were obsessed about it and became a solution. And I think that there's a lot of things around CNC engineering and mass production of around sort of mechanical mass production that I think, I think overall deep sustainability from a social perspective is going to come from actually our workforce. Like it's, there's a tremendous amount of need, and there's a lot of people that need work and education. So why not get these together? And I really think it's the only solution that's truly going to be sustainable in the long run.
Edie, same for you.
I like working with Jonah. You know why? Because I get to hear him say things like that. That was a total surprise and really good. I think the technology around it, that there's many things, I think. But I think fundamentally switching, and we talked about this a second ago, how consumers understand miles per gallon and electric cars now, and then the source of where that electricity is coming from, and understanding that loop is going to move into buildings. And it's going to move into how we value and measure. And I know we talk a lot about low energy or high performing buildings, but I think it's also around, you know, how many years are left in that building without maintenance. And I know that now you can search for a house and right there on the dashboard, you value the possible solar gain and the likelihood or how attractive it is to put solar on that building. I think how we value real estate, how we value the dollars we put into shelter. And I do think we'll walk around with not apps that are controlling the AC on our houses, but really value the sustainability, the materials, and I think the health. We haven't talked about that yet today, but I think we're all very aware of indoor air quality right now. And knowing that these buildings were either built with systems that think of healthy humans and animals inside, as well as the environment, but also the long-term health of those materials. I think we're going to start valuing that differently. And I certainly think as we look to create affordable and workforce housing, that that's valued just as high as in those big dollar custom homes.
I love that. And Edie, the last question to close this out is, this podcast is for contractors and its affiliates. And the word affiliates are the leaders of the tribe like you. And you've given us so many great things to think about. But what is that one thing for contractors and its affiliates to think about to go out there and crush it and grow their business?
That's a really good one. And this answer comes straight from where I sit at Be Public. There's a lot of work every day, but it's very important that we also are thinking ahead for 2 and 5 years and growing our teams and growing our partnerships to meet the demand of 5 years from now, not just today. And building, how do we look at building capacity? How do we look at building those partnerships? That there's a lot of work to do every day, and it's certainly more than 8 to 5 for most people in this industry. But it's really looking at the horizon line and building the companies that they want to have long-term, that are healthy and successful and sustainable as companies.
Awesome. Jonah, bring us home, my man.
Same, I think that's you. A really great question. That, you know, that I was thinking, build it like your kids are going to live there. And raise your expectations of construction. The code is the minimum allowed by law, not a guideline or best practice. And I think there is just so much that can be done in that, and it's really going to be up to the builders. They just have so much important and appropriate power at this point in both our communities and environmentally. They've great opportunity before them, and they've got really all the tools to take it on. So go for it.
Outstanding. Jonah and Edie, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story.
Thank you. Thanks a bunch. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Oh, Matt, so many talk tracks there that just hit me right there. And when I talk at the beginning with the end in mind of why I was so excited to do this is when Edie made me put myself in my own shoes of saying the time is now to build better buildings is why we do this, and say, think about every building that you're involved in and you're building it for your kids to live in that building 40 years from now. And then the time would be now, right? So that's why we have to join the Be Public movement and all educate the AOC tribe together. And the parallel that they're giving us tools to think about how we can all work together for the governance out there of to say, what is your mile per gallon rating in your home? As all the things are switching to solar and electric and all these moving parts, what is a true performance measure? And how will you be part of this? And I just loved when I started this podcast, I've been asking this question every time. And I always say, what is that one thing? Because I'm a technology guru. And when I first started this podcast, Matt, it was always the best answer I used to always think I got was the smartphone. Because I grew up with the Warriors, the trades, to where when we finally got a smartphone instead of their flip phone, is like, we can finally connect the field to the office, and building informational modeling will actually be a thing because the information in the data drop chasm is actually going to work. And here we sit today, and now everybody has a smartphone, and everybody has 50 apps that they don't know how to use, and it's all broken all again. And I'm doing a podcast exactly this morning, the podcast I recorded is around the IT house that AOC is offering an IT platform to help the Art of Construction tribe. And the whole thing is about humanizing the IT process. In the podcast I recorded this morning, and Scott and the team is weaving all these stories together. But the secret sauce, my co-host Ryan Lee said, is you better start adding bots to your IT platform because we don't have enough time and money. And I said, wait a second here. This whole podcast was about removing the robots because we're humanizing it. And now we're talking about the bots all over again. So we just have to be real about this and to say, when you go look at all these podcasts that we're listening to and bringing in these leaders, it's about humanizing the process, but managing the two things we don't have enough of, time and money. And this is what we mean when we say turning these video games into reality to build better buildings. Matt, bring us home, as I know there's a lot of stuff that Edie talked about with Jonas bringing the conceptuals to reality and putting this all together. When you and I talk about how we can all help the Art of Construction tribe build better buildings and having them on the platform to help us with this kit of parts.
So, you know, it's always an honor to be on these things and meet with these folks who are out there like pushing the frontiers. And I really like two nuggets that I took away was when, you know, Jonah was just talking about, you know, the care that people should be putting into houses. And I had that image of, you know, when people are driving through neighborhoods, you see those little signs with the little guy holding the flag and it says children playing, you know, and we should have one that says people living. Right, in these houses. And then the other nugget that I took away was when both of them were talking in collaboration, and all of a sudden it hit me, is there was this schism that happened back in architecture back in the day, way before you and I were born, man. And it was the master builder, right? Master architect. And then AIA and other places got involved and they said, no, you got to let that go because there's too much litigation with building. But what people who listen to this podcast are going to hear is these two folks, Edie and Jonah, are coming full circle and embracing the master architect, master builder. And so they're taking a mission and vision that's right up front. They've talked about that. They're taking human principles and a human need called shelter. And then they're taking a process and systems in order to humanize that and bring it all together. So to me, it's like a reestablishment of the profession becoming master builder and master architect.
So I close this out by saying, be public prefab. We're not just imagining building differently. We're doing it. Going out there and crush it, tribe.